Thank you. And I also am not a mathematician. I really am an astronomer, and I'm going to talk about how data interacts with other data in astronomy. And I'll talk about bibliographic data, but also actual data and how they all interact. And then at the end, I'll talk a little bit about how we're starting to use some social networking software in the bibliographic system that we run. And you'll see that. It's basically four or five little talks cobbled together. It's not one flowing thing. So I apologize for that if it seems sort of jerky. Well, I'll start by showing the basic bibliometric data, bibliographic data system, rather, in astronomy. This is ADS. I'll just run a very simple query in ADS so you just see it. Here I'm going to ask for all papers written by me. ADS covers physics and astronomy and the archive preprints, and I'm not going to ask the physics database, mostly because I have very few papers in the physics database. Anyway, here you get my papers, and if you're interested in, say, the top one, the photometric redshifts paper, you can click on the, I guess, E button here to get the HTML version. You just go there. That's the journal. And you'll see here that the journal links back to ADS. The journals and our system have been totally working together for the past 15 years. This is the paper, announcement paper for 15 years ago, announcing the system. And this is the use of that in the last, I don't know, from 2000 to 2006. In 1997, we started having more papers read through our system than in the sum of all the technical libraries of the world, more astronomy papers. And the number of papers read by astronomers has basically been doubling every 2 years ever since, and the number of people who are heavy users has been doubling. This continues out. This is today here. But the number of occasional users was doubling for a while until we started being indexed by Google, and then it went up very rapidly. So now there are more than a million people, different people every month, who come in through Google to read a paper or two. Well, before I get any farther on what that means for the interactions between papers and people, I thought I'd show this. This is the obsolescence diagram as measured by reads. So this is the number of reads per article in the year 2001 for the main astronomy journals through ADS as a function of their publication year. And this is a nice steep exponential function. This is a log plot, of course. It can be modeled by the sum of two exponentials. These are the two exponentials. I built a model in the paper that builds this. But you'll see it's a very nice fit and a very simple thing. Well, this is the same data, but for citations. And what I've done here is I've taken a very simple exponential ramp-on function and multiplied it times the reads data and also times the reads model. And which of these is the reads data and which is the actual citations, I don't actually remember anymore. But they all look exactly the same, which is to say the reads and the citations are basically doing the same thing and have basically the same obsolescence once you get past the fact that you can't read a paper before it's... You can't cite a paper until after you've read it. Not really, although I guess people do. Well, this is why I wanted to show those two things, because this is the reads data for the major astronomy journals via ADS for earlier this year. I did it, I don't know, May maybe. And this is very much the same function as I measured 5 or 6 years ago when I made the previous plots. But this is the same function, but for all things in ADS, with the readers coming in through Google. And you'll notice this is completely flat. What this says is that these guys have very different goals than these guys. So if you're going to build a system that is based on usage data, you need to be aware of exactly this and figure out, do you want these guys or do you want these guys? Do you want both? But they're different, so you have to understand what you want. All right, I'll just continue a little bit on showing what you get out of the use information. This is queries per million inhabitants versus GDP in dollars per capita. And this is this line here, this curve, is that queries is proportional to GDP squared on a per capita basis. These guys who don't fall outside the relationship are all former Soviet Union countries where they have more queries than you expect based on their GDP per capita, but they have a better infrastructure, really. Their economies collapsed in the 90s, and this data was taken, I think, in 2000. And these guys who are outside the structure on the other side, every single one of them is an oil-producing country, and they simply don't have the infrastructure that their GDP per capita would suggest. Otherwise, it seems like a pretty good approximation. And if you take that, you can actually predict from GDP per capita and number of scientists, you can predict the queries per thousand pretty well. This is one, two, three, four. This is five decades, and that's a pretty good prediction. So you can build models based on these data alone of the way science is done worldwide. This basically shows that it's not just astronomy that we're measuring. The normal measurements for world productivity, scientific productivity, are the number of citations to papers coming out of people in a country, or the number of papers coming out of people in the country. These are these two columns, and they're from the National Science Board. And this is the number of reads through ADS of astronomy papers for 2001. If you take the 35 or 40, I think it's actually 47, now that I think about it, countries that have more than a tenth of a percent of all science productivity each, and see whether the read, and look at the difference between the average of reads and cites and reads. You find, of cites and papers rather, I'm sorry, and reads, you find that the reads are a better prediction of this average than either of these two are of the other one, which is to say that the astronomy reads actually predict the amount of science being done on a country basis in the world pretty well. Okay, I'll now go on to the next mini topic, and I'm going to talk about how data is interconnected in astronomy, and we've been calling the system Urania for about 12 years. It consists of two major indexing engines, that's ADS, the literature database, and the Strasbourg Data Center and the National Extragalactic Database. This is in Strasbourg, France, and this is in Pasadena. And they sort of work together, and they're sort of competitors, but we all kind of work together and do joint queries just routinely, you know, many times a second sometimes. And we all talk to the data centers, we talk to the journals, everything links to each other. We are linked in by the archive, and there's the thing called the Virtual Observatory, which is looking to regularize all this. You'll see when I go through the sort of step through of what this looks like, how ugly it basically is. And the point of the Virtual Observatory is to make it stop being ugly so it can be built upon from an engineering point of view. Well, anyway, I'm going to go with a very rapid tour of how the data is interconnected. I rather think that you start network analyses by having actual networks that have meaning, and this is our network that has meaning. So I'm going to start by asking for all the papers about Abel 1795. That's a cluster of galaxies. I'm going to require that the word X-ray be in the abstract, and I'm going to require that there be data links for these papers. So these papers have associated links to data in one of the archives. And if I make that query, I get 158 papers, or did when I did this last year. And I'll just choose one. I'm going to choose Megan Donahue et al. Because I've met her, and I don't know any of these other people. And if you just click on this link here, you get the abstract page for that paper. The abstract's down here. These are all the links that that paper has. I'll explain them because these data are what's in the ADS logs. The ADS logs have every single time one of these things is clicked, and I just clicked one of them to get the abstract. We know the time, we know the person as a cookie, an IP address. We know what the paper was, and we know which of these links it was, and these logs go back 12 years, and starting in 1997, they had the majority of all readership in astronomy. We are now running about 70 million entries a year in this database. You can have relevance feedback and find more papers if you want. There are lots of other ways to do that besides this one. You can go the HTML version of the journal, the PDF version of the journal. You can go to your library subscription here. You can go to the free version and the archive. You can go to the data, and we will go there next. You can go to the references. You can go to the citation index, get only refereed citations if you want. You can go to the SIMBAD database. That's the one in Strasbourg, France. You can go to the NED database. That's the one in Pasadena. You can get all the also read articles, people who read this article also read, as well as the histories for citations, et cetera. And there's some other stuff you can go down there. But we're going to click on online data, and you get your choice. And I'm going to choose the first one first and just go to it instead of showing you all the links and whistles. And this is from the Chandra X-ray satellite. The Chandra satellite's still flying. And this paper refers to several observations made with Chandra. And we'll click the one that has to do with ABEL 1795. We'll go there. This is the actual data itself from the low-resolution camera. If you want the real data instead of just a picture, it's another couple clicks away, as is the software to reduce it. The high-resolution picture is there. And if you want, you can get all the papers associated with that data. That's just a query to ADS. They know the 11 papers, and they query ADS for these 11 papers. That's that. You could also go on to the XMM satellite. That's the European X-ray satellite. It's also still flying. Here's all the data. You can get all the software necessary to reduce the data if you want. And you can also go and get the papers. They format them themselves. But if you click on any one of them, it just goes back to ADS. Well, next we're going to go to the SIMBAD database. And here's the SIMBAD database for the Megan Donahue paper. It says that it knows about 16, if I can remember correctly, 16 papers, 16 objects. These are mostly clusters of galaxies. That are referred to in this paper. This is the list of them. We're going to choose ABEL 1795, which is somewhere down here. I can't see it on the side, but maybe that's it. We'll go there, and this is the page that SIMBAD has on ABEL 1795. It has a full bibliography. It has its position. It has all its various names. It's not just ABEL 1795. It's also called 3A1346 plus 6269 and a whole bunch of other things. It knows about all of them. We'll go down further on the page, and there's more information from there. We'll go here first at HESARC, and then we're going to come back and see Aladdin. But HESARC is at Goddard Space Flight Center, and they keep links to all these data also. And here's a page that comes off the page this way and down this way. There's a lot of data, and it's all linked to. We'll now go back to Aladdin and show what CBS does. If you bring up Aladdin, it brings up a picture. All these little X's are objects in the SIMBAD database that refer to this region of the sky. This is what the cluster looks like. If you want other pictures, you can just choose them. I'll choose the Sloan survey, and there it comes up. Or I could have chosen the Space Telescope, and there it comes up. Well, we'll go back to Megan Donahue's paper, and we'll go to the NED database. But instead of looking at ABEL 1795, we'll look at ABEL 1367, just because it shows something I'd like to show you. We'll go there. These are the objects that it knows about that cluster. The first one is the cluster itself, and the rest are mostly galaxies in the cluster. Here are the literature references and notes and data. They go out to about here on this page. We'll just choose the second one, which is the galaxy at the center of the cluster. These are its various names, its positions, measurements. We'll go down. Here's a picture of what it looks like. It's probably that guy, but there are three galaxies nearby. References, it has all the associated data links there. We'll keep down, there are more data links. We'll choose this one, the updated Zwicky catalog, and we'll go there because I'm one of the authors of this paper. When you do that, you get all three of the galaxies that I showed you, and the reason you get all three is because the Zwicky catalog is not that accurate in terms of positional accuracy, so any of these three could have been the one that Zwicky meant when he made the catalog in 1961. Chances are that the one that's closest is the one that we really mean. So we'll go there, and this is the spectrum of it. These are our measurements. This is basically the raw data. And from the raw data page, we have links to a whole bunch of other places we think are interesting. We'll just click on the TUMAS link. This goes to the TUMAS database, which is a NASA database in California. Actually, I guess it's in Pasadena. We'll go down to the bottom. Here's the infrared picture in the K-band of that image. That's the one they say it is. They don't really worry about the fact that the error circle is that big. Up on top, you can go to any other database you want. This is a tiny fraction of what the actual interlinks look like. I just thought I'd give you some sort of flavor for what's going on. The two indexing engines were, I view these two guys as essentially one thing, even though they're really two separate entities who compete. But they interact at all times. Remember, the first query was X-ray to ADS and ABEL 1795 to both CDS and NET. It was done without the user even knowing that it went there, unless you read the carefully. And everything interacts with the data centers. You didn't see any of the journals. We were using the papers, but we didn't actually ever go to the journals. Everything here is free except the journals, which are subscribed. For you, those of you open access advocates, this is a real argument in favor of making the journals open access, because it makes it very difficult for the journals to compete with databases as to where data and information ought to be stored in the future. Anyway, now I'll go to the next little... Well, we do get stuff from Archive directly, but ADS is one of the great databases of the world. We maintain that. It's got 6 million articles in it.
So you're entering that information by hand?
Well, no, we get it from the publishers electronically. We've been doing this for 20 years.
And let's see, but part of what you're doing is corresponding different sources. Like Archive may have the same paper as you find from another.
Oh, sure. We just match on titles and authors to do that. That works pretty well.
Okay, so maybe we can take this offline, but I'm interested in that process, because sometimes it can be very noisy and there are misspellings or typos. Or
we have Levenstein distance things and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, we've written lots of papers on these. We should, because I'm very interested in what you're doing too. I'll now talk about the second order operators. Second-order operators are basically database operators that perform operations on data associated with the objects returned by a first query. And the most famous one, I guess, is people who bought this book also bought from Amazon.com. You get a list of people when you put the book in, say, who bought this book, and then you look and see what they also bought, and you collate and sort it. These operators can become quite complex, and we implemented this in 1997. We didn't learn about it from Amazon.com. Anyway, I'll show you several of them so you get an idea of what it is that's possible using things like this. The first one I'm going to do, I'm going to look for papers that have weak gravitational lensing in their abstracts. And here we have the most recent 100. There are 1822 of them. I did this yesterday, the day before, so this is still pretty recent. We'll go to the bottom of the page. And we're going to collate the reference lists for those 100 papers. And that should give us the papers that are currently being the most cited by this field, because these 100 papers are papers in this field by basically choosing them that way. They all have reference lists, and the papers that are in the reference list the most are the currently most cited papers in that field, and here they are. And in fact, 29 of those 100 papers refer to Kaiser et al., and 28 of them to Bartleman and Schneider's review article. Well, okay, now we have these most currently cited papers, and we'll go to the bottom of this page. And we'll choose them, because you can choose them, of course, but we'll choose all of them. And we're going to get the citation lists for these papers. So each of these papers has a list of papers that cite them. And if you merge all these papers together, the papers that cite the largest number of these papers are going to be papers that have extensive discussion sections of these papers and what these papers represent, basically reviews. And if you do that, here we have the top paper. Is this still working? The top paper cited 47 of those 100 papers on the previous page. Obviously, it has a discussion section that's actually pretty extensive of whatever those previous 100 papers were about. Well, now, if we go to the bottom of this page, these are papers with extensive discussions. And we click on the also read papers, we're going to get a list first of all the people who've read any of those papers in the last however long we do it for. I think we do it for 90 days, but I actually don't remember how we designed it. And then we get a list of all the papers that they've read, and on the average, they're going to be interested in this, and we'll get the currently most read papers on this subject, or certainly most read papers by people who are interested in this subject, as you'll see now, because the very top one, Spergel et al., is really not on this subject. It's the third-year WMAP result, which is well on its way to being the most cited paper in astrophysics and is extraordinarily important. But all the rest of them really are on this subject, and they're pretty hot. 14 of the top 20 papers have been published in the last 60 days, and they're all on this subject. Now, you can do it differently. That's only one way to go about doing it, of course. If you start, instead of with the most recent list, if you start with the most cited list, and then you get so that you get the 100 most cited papers that contain the words weak gravitational lensing, and you then get the citation lists for these, you'll get all the classical review articles in this field, and these are them, and it works essentially perfectly to do it that way. We use this in our notification service. This is my ADS archive. We have a couple of them. We have, besides going over archive, we also go over the astronomy journal literature and the physics journal literature. Somewhere between 4,000 and 5,000 people subscribe to this. And we use the second order operators here in a number of ways. This first query is gets the most recent papers that have cited a paper where I'm an author. You see, this is my version. If you were to have it, you'd have your own version. And you know, to do that, of course, we make a query that gets my papers, and then we get a citation query, and then we sort them by date. This is just a query that gets authors from a list that I've given it. So these are my favorite authors who've written papers in the last week, because all this is 1 week's worth of data. And these are two subject matter queries, kind of like weak gravitational lensing, but this one is redshifts in cosmology and halo of the Milky Way, basically my research topics. But this one here is second order operator. These are the most popular papers currently, so papers most also read by people who are reading papers in this query. Although we do it over a longer period of time because these are only the last week, so these papers actually haven't had any time to be read yet. So we do it over the past, I think, 45 days or something like this. And this is the same thing for this query. You'll note neither of these are the same. And then this is the most cited list, exactly the way I described it before. And this comes out every week in my email. If you want one, subscribe. Archive does cover computer science at some level. All right, now I'm going to go into the third or fourth little mini talk. And this is a talk written by Martin Rosfall and Carl Bergstrom, who are our collaborators in creating the social networking environment that we plan on actually implementing in the next year or so. We have other directions we're looking in also from people at Los Alamos, Johan Bolin and his collaborators. But I'll show you Martin's, because Martin was going to speak here, and I guess, or Carl was, I can't figure it out, but neither of them did, so they sent me their slides. So anyway, interactions, obviously, the simple systems have simple interactions, and social systems, biological, have complex interactions. Networks, well, I don't need to describe networks, but they're getting extremely complex. And here's a protein network. I should mention that Carl and Martin are evolutionary biologists. They're not mathematicians either. And they're basically doing this stuff having to do with literature. I'll get to the literature on the next slide or the slide after. Mostly as a sort of a quasi-hobby, and also to test out their ideas before they put them into practice with looking at how genes evolve and things like that. All right, so the thing that they are building that we are very interested in is maps. Well, first, why is a picture not a good map? What is it about a map? Well, this picture doesn't tell me anything about how I can get from Harvard Square, which is about here, to the Prudential Center, which is about here. This map, however, does. It simplifies and highlights the things that are actually important to me. And the best maps are also good compressions in the sense of Shannon entropy or Shannon information. That's Shannon. Now I'll show you the rudiments of the algorithm that they're using to do this. They have a nice paper out on mapping science, which is what this talk is for. And then I'll show you at the end what we're using it for. But anyway, here's sort of a network. And they first they find the probability of occupation about all the nodes in the network by just a random walk through the network. Now they say that objects deserve unique names, okay? Everybody wants to have their own name. And important objects deserve unique names. That says that an important object would be, say, New York City or Cambridge, and if once you have the important name, the name Broadway can be in both places, because both actually New York City and Cambridge have a Broadway. So if you have a two-stage naming scheme, you need to have a name for the city, you need to have a name inside the city for the street, and you need to have a coding which tells you when you're leaving the city and going to another one. Well, okay, this is what they do. And by getting the cities, basically, they're able to create these kind of maps, and they are creating maps of the structure of science, is what they're finally trying to do, but the application is probably not so important. It is to me, of course, but not in a more general sense. All right, well, what they're doing is they're minimizing the entropy in the map equation. This is basically the first term is the entropy of the cities, the higher level descriptors, and the second term is of the lower level descriptors, basically the streets. These terms P and Q are the probabilities of occupation for a random walker through the network. And basically, they're trying to minimize these things by merging cities together in the process. They start with everything being a city and everything being a street, and they merge cities until such time as they don't minimize, until this doesn't go down. And it's the steepest descent search, a greedy search. I think this has to do with Mark Newman and his group, but I don't really know since I don't know anything about this. And I'm just sort of going through the words for them. But anyway, I'll go through this pretty rapidly so that you can see it. But these are the cities, and these are the streets, basically. And these are the steps in the algorithm. And you see how it's lowering the entropy, which is also exactly the same as lowering the as increasing the coding length, you know, all the Shannon type stuff. Keep going. Okay. So this is the end. And they now have gotten into four groups. So these are basically the countries or the fields or whatever it is that you think that they're measuring. They did this for the citation index for 2004, which they got from ISI. And they made this map of science and where the flows are, because of course they use the flow information. Some fields cite other fields that are not cited backwards. Like say, I think the economics is the thing here that economics cites this way, but nobody really cites back into it.
How do you define flows? Just the weight, the amount of citations going out of the one field to another field?
That's right. If I cite you, I flow information to you, and if you never cite me back, then it's not. And you can zoom in on this, and you can zoom out, and see all kinds of nifty things, and this is in their article. And if you want to find more about it, this is their website. All right. So now the next thing I'm going to do is I'm going to talk about how we're going to apply this to ADS. First, we're going to cluster the entire physics and astronomy literature by references and citations. References, and it's all just references. Citations are just the same thing looked at in the other direction. And when we do this, we get about 20,000 clusters. And these all make sense, so far as I can tell, on a basis of subject. So these, we form, there are 6 million articles in the database, and we have citations or references for about 3 million of them. There are about 30 million citing-cited pairs in the database. And this produces about 20,000 clusters. This is somewhat tunable, so we'll see what we finally get out of it. And we're going to throw a whole bunch of little ones away, so we'll probably wind up with about 10,000 that we keep. Well, what we have now, we have a toy interface to a subset of them, so you can basically see what's going on. But we'll have a full user interface soon. We're actually working on it. I can't show it now because I haven't seen it either. It's not that far along. But I expect that January the 8th, it will be ready to be seen. That's the American Astronomical Society meeting. Well, this is what it looks like. We just took the eigenfactor.org little widget. Those of you who've been there have seen this already, except it has fields in it. First, I named these things, but that won't work for 20,000 of them. So what we did is we created word clouds for all of them. How this works is here's the word cloud, and then over here are the top 10 papers in the field. Each one of these has a rank for how strong it is inside this cluster. So you can, by looking at these things, you can also tell what this is about. And you can go and get the most popular papers, the most instructive papers with the second order operators by doing this. Let's see, well, you can click on any of these. It moves around real nicely in the normal Flash sense, but this being PowerPoint, it won't do that. But I just clicked on another one and just moved the center to somewhere else. So I'm going to talk about lensing and clusters and galaxy mass, just basically what I talked about in the other example.
You just use word frequency to determine the category of the nodes?
Yeah, we intend on having it be adaptive, depending on where you are, but we haven't done that yet.
Because it seems like you see clusters and galaxies as repeated.
Yeah, galaxies is repeated all through it, because they're all about galaxies.
Every
so.
Time, like a TFIDF,
But
it'll kill out the things that are just always.
Well, if you do it for the whole database, which we already, this is TF-IDF for the whole database.
Oh, okay.
You know, there are 20,000 of them, and there are at least 1,000 of them that have to do with galaxies and clusters. Mm-hmm. So what we have to do is we have to adaptively do this as you drill down, and we haven't done that yet. But yes, we will, and we'd love to have help. If we go over here, I'm going to click most popular here. And see what happens if you do that. And here's the second order operator based on the top 100 or 200 papers in that grouping. And Bartleman and Schneider's review article on weak gravitational lensing is the most popular paper of that. And that may not be all that interesting to you if you're already an expert in this field. But if you sort these papers by date, and we only have 100 papers here, so we have 100 papers that are being heavily read, ranked by how heavily they are read. But if we rank them by date instead, we get the papers that have appeared, well, this one came out this November, and these guys are all came out in October. We get the most cited recent hot papers in the field, and that works pretty automatically. And it's our intention to build this kind of thing into things that are automatic, so you don't have to make any of these clicks and go through the map, but we simply have to know that you're kind of interested in this field, and this stuff will just automatically appear for you in some form. All right, so in the future, what are we going to do? Well, there are many interactions, obviously, in these networks that I've been showing you. We're going to combine these with the use of vector spaces to define continuous variables that allow us to hone in on what people really want and basically do recommender systems on the fly. And we, of course, have to do user interfaces that are personalized, contextual, interactive, and you'll see when I get to that slide how badly we are at it. Interaction networks, we can have two papers have the same reader. That's something that Martin and Carl are working on, but they're working on it in terms of a time series. So if reader one, or number, you know, whatever his number is, they've all got these 16-digit cookies, reads a paper, and then within some period of time reads another paper. They attribute a direction to that, and they intend on using that in order to test their directional algorithms. two readers of the same paper and also two papers of the same reader, which is, of course, the same graph looked about like the other way, is what Johan Bohlen and I are working on. Two papers from the same telescope, two papers about the same star or galaxy or cluster of galaxies or whatever. Two words are read by the same reader, two authors with the same citation, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. There are really a large number of these. And these are actually relatively simple calculations to make to evaluate these networks. It's, you know, less than an hour of computer time to do this for the 3 million articles. We can probably test all of these at some level. The question is figuring out which ones work best in what situations, and we haven't a clue as to how to figure that out. And of course, there are many higher order combinations. For vector spaces, well, I'll point to Peter Osorio's C-space paper, because I knew Peter, who died about a year ago. What Peter did in 1965, or 63, I guess is when he did it, is he said that you can take a series of subject categories, and you can take a set of words. And you can get experts in the subject categories to rank the words by their importance to the subject category. And then by a manipulation with eigenvectors, you know, some sort of factor analysis, you can build a relevance space to classify documents and do document retrieval. And he built that system in many different forms. It worked for many years. He did mostly classified work for the Air Force, so most of it is not published. But that paper is. In 1988, I talked to Peter and figured out how if you had a set of classified documents, which we had at that time, which Astronomy's Abstracts came in a book, and the book had about 100 chapters, and each chapter was cosmology, stellar spectroscopy, planets, variable stars, basic subject matters. You could take the words and do the frequency analysis as a function of category and basically build the same kind of space. And that's what we intended to build ADS out of. The intention to build ADS was basically then. But the guys with the book of abstracts wouldn't let us, so we did a much more simple technique. They finally went out of business in about 2000, but it was too late to save them, and we haven't done it yet. As a basic technique, we now have a large number of categories. And we can have the frequencies of the words as a function of the subject matter or category, and that gives the dimensionality of the space. So if there are 20,000 clusters from Carl and Martin's analysis, we have a 20,000 dimensional space where we have however many words we have. We have words as equivalent classes of words, so that not every word is unique. So they're only on the order of 15 or 20,000 actual words. So we basically have a 20,000 by 20,000 or so matrix. We can reduce the dimensionality of that matrix, obviously, by things like singular value decomposition, the normal thing you might do with, say, latent semantic indexing. It remains to be shown that this works better than latent semantic indexing, but I suspect it will. And, of course, we don't just do words with this technique. We can mix any kind of data types. The one that I'm describing here with Carl's clusters and words mixes citations and words just automatically. But you can also mix things like types of object or measurements with the words and the data, or you can mix authors. There are all sorts of things you can mix together using these techniques. So finally, user interfaces. We haven't a clue how to go and show all this stuff. We haven't actually built it yet, and one of the reasons I'm here is to see whether anybody wants to work with us. Thank you very much.